All right, so you're probably thinking another Supreme Court case.
Oh.
But this one, Tennessee v. Davis. You gotta trust me on this. It's a gem, really, and it's still super relevant today,
Yeah.
especially when you're talking about federal officers and, state charges.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like when you have a Border Patrol agent, maybe an FBI agent gets caught up in some state investigation, and everyone's fighting over who gets to actually prosecute the case.
Right.
Tennessee v. Davis kind of set the stage for
Right.
how we handle those kind of showdowns.
It really did. It's pretty fascinating, A case from way back in 1880, right in the middle of the Reconstruction era, still has so much relevance to what we're dealing with today.
Yeah.
And I think it really boils down to this fundamental tension that we always seem to have between federal power and states' rights.
Yeah, for sure. And something that, as lawyers, you guys grapple with every day.
Oh, absolutely. Every single day.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Paint us a picture. What
Yeah.
exactly went down in Tennessee v. Davis?
Okay, so picture this. James Davis. He's a deputy U.S. tax collector. He's down in Tennessee trying to shut down these illegal distilleries. I mean, talk about a dangerous job,
Yeah,
right?
wow.
Things get a little out of hand, shots are fired, and wouldn't you know it, someone ends up dead.
Oh, wow.
Now, Davis, he's claiming self-defense, but murder, that's a state crime. So the big question here is, can the feds just waltz in and take over this whole case?
Ah, so that's where this whole federal jurisdiction thing comes into play. It's like a tug of war,
Yeah,
a legal one.
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a real battle. And the rope in this tug of war is, you guessed it, the supremacy clause of the Constitution.
Right.
That clause basically says when federal law and state law clash, federal law wins. It's the top dog.
Right.
Think of it like this. You got your state laws right,
Right.
but the Constitution and the laws passed under it. They're like this big, huge federal umbrella covering everything.
Right, gotcha.
Nothing gets past that umbrella.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this case gets, really interesting. So, how did the Supreme Court handle this? Did they side with Davis and the feds?
They did, but it wasn't a unanimous decision. It was 8-1. And there's this really passionate dissent that's honestly just as important as the majority opinion.
Okay.
The majority basically said if you have a federal officer doing their job and they get hit with state charges, charges that could really mess with how the federal government operates, the feds can step in. They can move that case to federal court.
Hold on. 8-1. That one dissenting judge must have had some really strong arguments.
Oh, absolutely. Justice Clifford, he was worried this would give federal officers, basically a get out of jail free card.
Oh, wow.
Like they could commit crimes and just, skip facing any consequences in state courts. He was all about states' rights and saw this as a huge power grab by the federal government.
Wow. So you've got these two totally different, like, visions of how power should be balanced, in our system.
Yeah.
What were some of the specific things the majority used to, like, justify their decision?
So, Justice Strong, he wrote the majority opinion, and he really hammered home this idea that federal law, it reigns supreme.
Right.
He argued that letting states prosecute federal officers for, things they did while doing their jobs, that could essentially cripple the entire federal government. Like, what's the point of having federal officers if they can't do their job, without worrying about getting hauled into state court?
Right.
He even wrote, I'm paraphrasing here, that allowing this would be like letting, I don't know, a state sheriff arrest a U.S. marshal for doing their duty. It would just completely break down the whole system.
So it sounds like the majority was concerned not just with protecting individual officers, but also with making sure that the entire federal government could function effectively.
Absolutely.
Like they were saying, hey, states, you can't interfere with our people when they're doing their job.
Exactly. And Justice Strong even pointed to a specific part of the Constitution to back this up. Article 3, Section 2, that gives federal courts power over cases arising under federal law. And he saw Tennessee v. Davis as, fitting right under that umbrella.
Right.
He basically said, look, this case involves a federal officer acting under federal authority. It's ours.
Okay, so we've got the majority making this strong case for federal supremacy. But let's go back to that one dissenter for a second. What were Justice Clifford's main points? Why did he think this was such a bad decision?
Well, Justice Clifford argued very passionately, I might add, that this was a dangerous erosion of state power. I
Right.
mean, he saw murder, even if it's by a federal officer, as a state crime. Plain and simple,
Right.
And he was worried this ruling would create this like two-tiered justice system
Yeah.
where federal officers, they get special treatment compared to just, you know, everyday citizens.
Yeah, I can see his point. It's like, oh, you're wearing a federal badge, different set of rules for you.
Right.
That doesn't sit right.
No, not at all. And Clifford argued that this whole decision went against the very idea of federalism, you know?
Right.
Where states have the primary responsibility for, you know, handling criminal justice matters within their own borders.
Right, right.
He saw this as the federal government, like, stepping way over the line.
So we've got this battle of ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Federal supremacy versus states' rights. How did the Supreme Court's decision, how did it actually play out in the real world? Did Tennessee v. Davis, like, create a clear test for when a federal officer could get their case moved to federal court?
Well, it's not that straightforward.
Wait.
The court, they didn't give us a, you know, a nice, neat checklist, but they did lay out some really crucial factors that courts still consider today when a federal officer wants out of state court.
So it's more like a set of guidelines than a hard and fast rule.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Basically, the case boils down to two key questions.
Okay.
First, is the defendant a federal officer? Are they actually acting within the scope of their duties? Like, are they on the job?
Right.
Second question, does the state prosecution, does it pose a real threat to federal operations? Or does it maybe raise a federal defense?
Okay. I think I'm following you. But this is where it gets tricky, right?
Yeah.
How do courts actually figure out if a state prosecution is truly messing with federal operations?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where the real legal, you know, wrangling comes in. It means scrutinizing the specifics of each case.
Right.
What's the nature of the crime? What are the officer's actual responsibilities? How could this state prosecution impact the federal government's ability to even function? You know, it's complicated.
So it's not as easy as, you know, flashing a badge and yelling federal jurisdiction.
Exactly.
There needs to be a real connection between the crime, the officer's duties, and that potential for interference with the feds.
Absolutely. I mean, imagine, for example, you have an EPA official. They get a speeding ticket while they're driving between sites for, you know, an environmental investigation. They can't just scream federal jurisdiction and get off scot-free, right?
Right, right.
The court would have to look at it and say, okay, does that speeding ticket actually pose a threat to the EPA's work? Probably not.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It needs to be more than just, like, a minor inconvenience.
Exactly.
Can you give us an example where the connection is stronger, like where Tennessee v. Davis would actually apply?
Sure. Let's say you have a park ranger in a national park.
Okay.
They use force to, I don't know, subdue someone who's vandalizing a protected site, threatening visitors.
Okay.
That ranger might face, you know, assault charges in state court. But the federal government could argue that, hey, prosecuting this ranger would totally undermine our ability to protect this federal property, you know?
Yeah.
And it would prevent us from ensuring public safety in the park.
Right. In that scenario, yeah, the ranger's actions are directly tied to their federal responsibility.
Exactly.
And the state prosecution, that could make it way harder for them to do their jobs effectively. So Tennessee v. Davis, that could be their, you know, get out of jail free card, sort of.
Exactly. And, you know, this case has even been cited in situations involving, like, federal scientists. They're out there conducting research on federal lands.
Wow.
The line is not always clear.
Right.
And that's why judges, they have to really carefully look at each case to see if it truly warrants federal jurisdiction.
I'm realizing this is a much bigger issue than I initially thought. Tennessee v. Davis, it's not just some historical dispute, you know? It has really serious implications for how we think about power today, how we balance power.
I think you hit the nail on the head. This case gets at the very heart of, you know, what federalism means in practice.
Yeah.
It's about understanding that relationship between state and federal authority.
Yeah.
And figuring out which level of government is best equipped to handle certain, you know, very specific situations.
And as we've seen, there's a lot of gray area.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes these cases, I don't know, even more interesting.
Absolutely.
Because it's not always clear cut. Who should have the final say?
Right. And that ambiguity is why legal precedent, like Tennessee v. Davis, it's so important.
Yeah.
It provides this framework, you know, for navigating these really complex questions of jurisdiction and making sure that justice is served.
Right.
Even in tricky situations involving federal officers.
It sounds like this case forces us to think really critically about accountability, too.
For sure.
We want to ensure that federal officers, you know, they're held responsible for what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But we also don't want them to be unfairly targeted just for doing their jobs.
You got it. And that's the tightrope that courts have to walk when they're applying Tennessee v. Davis.
Right.
They need to protect both the integrity of state criminal justice systems and the, you know, the legitimate functions of the federal government.
So it's this constant balancing act. You're weighing the interests of both the state and federal authorities.
Absolutely. And Tennessee v. Davis serves as this reminder that our legal system, it's constantly grappling with these questions of power and accountability.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, as we've been talking about Tennessee v. Davis, I keep thinking back to Justice Clifford and that lone dissenting voice.
Yeah.
He seemed, I don't know, really worried about what it would mean to give the federal government too much power in these kinds of situations.
Oh, absolutely. His dissent is really worth thinking about. I mean, he saw this case as potentially opening the door to abuse,
mm-hmm.
you know, where federal officers could use their position to avoid being held accountable for actions that would, you know, get any other person in trouble.
It makes you wonder if his concerns were valid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, have we seen any situations where federal officers have maybe not gotten away with crimes, but at least benefited from this kind of jurisdictional, I don't know, shield?
That's a really good question. And it's tough to answer.
Yeah.
There have definitely been cases where, you know, how Tennessee v. Davis has been applied has been controversial. Mm-hmm. Take, for example, cases involving federal law enforcement officers who use deadly force. It can be so difficult to determine whether they were acting within the scope of their duties or if the state prosecution is really interfering with federal operations.
Right.
It's just, it's murky.
It seems like those cases often spark a lot of debate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
About whether federal officers are being held to the same standards as everyone else.
Oh, absolutely. And that brings us back to that core tension we've been talking about all along, right?
Right.
How do we balance the need to protect federal authority with this need to make sure that justice is applied equally, no matter who's involved?
Right, right. No easy answers there. It's a question that every generation seems to grapple with.
It really is. And it's also worth remembering that, you know, how we understand federalism, it's always evolving. What might have seemed like a clear-cut case of federal supremacy back in 1880, well, it might be seen totally differently today.
So Tennessee v. Davis might be a landmark case, but it's not like a static one. It's constantly being reinterpreted and applied to all these new situations.
Exactly. And that's what makes studying legal precedent so fascinating, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just about memorizing the rules. It's about understanding how those rules are shaped by history and society and, you know, all these political forces.
We've covered a lot of ground today, from illegal distilleries in, you know, Reconstruction era Tennessee to modern day debates about police brutality and use of force by federal agents. It's pretty clear that Tennessee v. Davis has had a lasting impact.
Absolutely.
It shaped not just legal doctrine, but also this ongoing conversation we have about the balance of power in our system.
I completely agree. And, you know, as we wrap up, I want to emphasize something you said earlier. Understanding Tennessee v. Davis, it's not just some academic exercise for lawyers and law students.
Right.
This case touches on really fundamental questions.
Yeah.
About individual rights, about government authority, about, you know, the very structure of our federal system. It reminds us that these legal battles, they have real world consequences for all of us, yeah, not just the people in the courtroom.
Really well said. Well, on that note, I think it's time for us to come up for air. Resurface from this deep dive.
Back to the surface.
But before we go, we want to leave you with one final thought, something to ponder.
Okay.
Imagine you're arguing a case today and Tennessee v. Davis gets brought up. Which side would you be on? Would you be fighting for the federal government's right to step in? Or would you be advocating for the state's authority to handle things within its own borders?
It really makes you think, doesn't it? I mean, it's a question that forces us to examine our own beliefs about the role of government, the limits of individual rights, and that delicate balance of power that, you know, underpins our entire legal system.
So keep those mental gears turning. And until next time, stay curious.
And never stop exploring the complexities of the law.